Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of OEM TV. I'm Eric Mills. I do Windows Server Marketing at Microsoft, and I'm joined today by none other than Keith Mayer, a featured guest. How's it going, Keith?
Doing well, Eric. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing very well. I've been looking forward to this episode for a long time. A lot of people are going to be interested in this one. We're going to be talking about open source and how Microsoft and Windows Server are embracing open source. And I'm really happy to have you on the show here today, Keith, because I know you have a ton of passion and knowledge about this topic. And things have been changing a lot with Microsoft and the way that we embrace open source. And so I'm sure a lot of people are going to learn things that they had no idea that we're doing. So it's going to be a great episode here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So we're going to be talking today all about how Microsoft is embracing open source and how people have a lot more options than ever before when they're considering, you know, Microsoft technology or open source technologies. And, you know, just to start us off here, Keith, you know, historically, most people have made a choice one versus the other. You know, I'm going to be a Microsoft shop or I'm going to be a Linux shop. And then, you know, once they start down that path, they stay down that path. But what we're seeing these days is there's a lot of mixing going on. There's a lot of different, you know, I can do some things open source and some things with Microsoft, and the two can communicate in brand new ways. So I want to talk about, you know, just some of the ways that people now, some of the advantages of doing it both ways, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. You know, a lot of organizations have realized that some of their applications may run on Windows stack great, and then there's other applications that they may purchase or develop in-house that have been, for one reason or another, developed on perhaps Linux or whatnot, right? And so they oftentimes struggle with how to best manage the dual platforms that they have in their environment and control cost, control administrative effort. So a lot of the optimizations we've made with Windows Server, specifically with 2016, have been targeted around bringing both open source and traditional Microsoft stack applications together on the Windows Server platform so that you have a single platform to be able to manage consistently across. But the other piece that's been evolving over the last few years, 2 or 3 years specifically, is the idea that, you know, open source is no longer just Linux-based applications, right? There's actually a significant amount of Microsoft technologies that have been open sourced. And people are, oftentimes when I talk to them, they're surprised to learn this. So, you know, .NET Core, ASP.NET MVC and Web API and Web Pages, the work that we've done for helping to contribute to the Linux kernel community, where we've contributed, you know, tens of thousands of lines of code to the open source community just in that aspect alone, is really interesting. And, you know, a lot of .NET developers find it intriguing that suddenly they may actually be open source developers nowadays without really even realizing it.
Right. So can you dig into .NET Core a little bit more? Like, for people that think .NET is just the Microsoft development framework, what is .NET Core?
Yeah, so .NET Core is really a streamlined version of the .NET framework that's optimized for born-in-the-cloud applications. And so with .NET Core, what we've done is we've taken out a lot of the pieces that were more for WinForm, Windows desktop, or client applications, or Windows mobile device applications, and we focus specifically on web and web API type applications, and really streamlined .NET Core, and then made it an open source solution, an open source stack that can run on Windows or Linux, right, from that standpoint.
Right, so that's awesome. So people can still use Visual Studio and .NET Core and deploy their applications to run on Linux because .NET Core runs on Linux.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, Visual Studio is another great example of embracing the open source community. We have a Visual Studio Code offering that's a free, you know, a code editor that supports both Microsoft Stack as well as you know, Python or PHP or whatnot. It integrates with GitHub for source control and whatnot. So it's another example of our ecosystem that is aligning very closely with open source.
Right. So VS Code can run on, correct me if I'm wrong, Windows, Mac, or Linux. Is that right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just an IDE. Regardless of what client platform you're using to build your app, VS Code will run on it. And then if you're going to deploy on a Windows server, you could use .NET. If you're going to deploy onto Windows, you could use .NET Core.
Yep.
Awesome. Absolutely. Yep. Nice. And you mentioned some open source contributions that we make. Can you talk a little more about the contributions that Microsoft makes to the open source community?
Yeah, definitely. Early on in the earlier days of Windows Server and Hyper-V, there was a concerted effort, right, of getting started and being able to support Linux as a guest operating system within Hyper-V virtual machines. And so in order to light up the value-added features that Hyper-V provides around resource management and management of the VM itself and the workloads that are running inside that VM, our Hyper-V team developed Linux integration services, which are a set of enlightened drivers, right, that allow the Linux kernel to more efficiently communicate with Hyper-V, both from a management and a performance standpoint. And so those Linux integration services have been ported to Ubuntu and CentOS and Red Hat and SUSE and FreeBSD, every, you know, popular Linux distro, right? And they continue to be maintained and incorporated into new kernel releases of those Linux distros as well. And so that alone represents, you know, as I was saying a little earlier, tens of thousands of lines of Linux kernel code that we've contributed to the open source community. And then aside from that, you know, the work that we've been doing with Docker to extend Docker support for Windows Server and Windows Server containers, that's part of our open source contributions as well, where we've been jointly working with the Docker community to provide Docker Hub integration, Docker Client integration, the ability for Docker Swarm and other Docker container orchestrators like Kubernetes to be able to manage Windows Server containers as side by side with Linux containers. And then also working with other orchestration providers like Mesos and to integrate Windows Server management into DCOS as well, side by side with Linux container management.
Yeah, as usual, Keith, you're packing in so much information in such a short period of time. I want to back up a little bit and dig into a few of these things because it's really interesting. First of all, you were talking about the Linux virtual machines and, you know, Linux virtual machines and Windows virtual machines running side by side on Hyper-V on the same platform, and then Linux containers and Windows containers working side by side as well. And, you know, a lot of people think that Hyper-V is just Microsoft only, like you can only run Windows virtual machines on Hyper-V. But, you know, really, it supports all the major distros of Linux that you mentioned there. And you can run Linux virtual machines and Windows virtual machines side by side on Hyper-V. And take it a step further, you know, Hyper-V is really something that we give away for free. It's our enterprise class hypervisor. And yep. you can just download it, you know, online for free. It's called Hyper-V Server. So if you just want to download Hyper-V and have the full enterprise class hypervisor, you can do that. You download Hyper-V Server, and then you could fire up some Linux virtual machines on that physical server, and now you're running Linux virtual machines on top of Hyper-V, and you don't have to pay Microsoft a penny for that, right, Keith?
That's right. Yep. It's our bare metal hypervisor, kind of all the other Windows Server roles and features that are not Hyper-V related are stripped out, very low footprint, very low amount of memory. And it's got, as you said, it's enterprise grade. So you can take Hyper-V servers, you can cluster them for high availability. It's got the same performance and scalability that Hyper-V and the full versions of Windows Server offers. So it's not a limited version of Hyper-V, right, from that standpoint. It's full Hyper-V.
Right. A lot of there are several companies that give away a free hypervisor, but it's the scaled down version that doesn't have all, right, the features, like it doesn't have the ability to migrate virtual machines and has limits on the amount of RAM and that kind of thing. So this is the full version of Hyper-V. So running Linux virtual machines and Windows virtual machines side by side, fully supported with Hyper-V, very cool. And then with some of the enhancements of Windows Server 2016, introducing containers and all the, you know, containers have their heritage really in open source, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, they came from Docker really popularized containers, primarily on the Linux platform originally. And Docker container support has exploded to the level that really now the Docker container format has been released into its own open source container ecosystem. So it's definitely exploding at this point, right, because of the agility and portability that containers provide, as well as the increased density of running applications and trying to best leverage all the resources you have in your servers and VMs more efficiently than you can if you aren't using containers.
Sure, makes sense. And we're talking primarily about on-premises Windows Server here, but most of this is also true for Azure, right? So Azure has a ton of open source functionality built into that. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in Azure, the compute hosts that are running in our Azure data center regions, you know, tens of thousands of compute hosts per region, and, you know, hundreds of thousands across all of our regions, are running an optimized version of Hyper-V, right, for hyperscale cloud deployments of that size and nature. And, you know, what we see is, you know, a fair percentage of those virtual machines and workloads that are deployed being Linux, as well as Windows Server. And in addition, we have open source offerings around areas like containers through Azure Container Service, which is basically spinning up a Docker Swarm or Kubernetes or Mesos cluster for managing and orchestrating large container deployments. We also have other open source investments around big data analysis with HD Insight, which is basically an open source Hadoop distribution that runs as a platform service. We have the ability to provision app services in the cloud that are running on Linux stacks as well as Windows stacks. So a lot of great features. But underneath the covers, it's all running on that same core of the Hyper-V host that Windows Server and Windows Server 2016 is based on as well. And a lot of people find that interesting too, because oftentimes they think of other alternative virtualization stacks as being kind of the market leader. But when you think about, you know, hundreds of thousands of compute hosts around the world that are all running on Hyper-V, I don't think there's any virtualization stack that can come close to touching us in terms of enterprise-grade scale and proven ability to run at very high volumes.
Nice. And the game is really changed with Hyper-V lately. And there's so much Linux support in Azure now. Our CEO, Satya Nadella, has said, we want Azure to be the best place to run Linux. Yeah. So we really are embracing the open source community there and, you know, dedicating a ton of resources to making, you know, the rapid progress that we've made. So really exciting stuff there. Now, Keith, I know a lot of people like open source tools. Both the tools that are, you know, they've come to know and love using Linux, as well as some third-party tools that are really getting a lot of traction right now. Can you talk a little bit about how those can integrate with Microsoft technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in the Windows world, a lot of Windows admins are used to PowerShell, right? And our PowerShell team has been working with the open source community in a couple different ways. One is that we now provide PowerShell DSE support for Linux as well as Windows. So if you're using PowerShell for configuration management, you have a choice to apply the same PowerShell-based configuration management tools to both platforms. Awesome. But also, if we flip gears over to the open source tooling side, you know, Linux admins, well, they're typically used to using tools like SSH and SFTP and whatnot for connecting and transferring files between their hosts, or SCP. And so our PowerShell team is also working with the OpenSSH community to port that over to the Windows platform. There's an active GitHub project that you can install the OpenSSH bits right on your Windows Server hosts and SSH into them and get to a command prompt and be able to do your administration from the command line. And then from a Windows client standpoint, you know, we have full bash support for Windows client as well, where you're able to bring up a Ubuntu bash session, not inside of a virtual machine, but right on top of the Windows client desktop,
that's awesome.
Be able to SSH to your Windows hosts or your Linux hosts and be able to integrate with them. So even if you're used to Linux-style admin tools or development tools, Windows on your desktop, Windows on the server are still very reasonable choices.
That is so cool. And I think a lot of people may not realize like how powerful this is and how nice it would be for someone that's very familiar with SSH and the command line in Linux to be able to open up that bash shell in Windows, you know, just in Windows, native Windows, not a virtual machine, not emulation like you're talking about, and, you know, SSH to their Windows or their Linux server to do administration or whatever they want to do. How cool is that?
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, right. Great support. And then, you know, a lot of times developers will leverage that. Open source developers will leverage that for building out their dev environments. And so oftentimes those developers will be, you know, building applications perhaps in, you know, Node.js or Tomcat or PHP or Python or Ruby. Those applications themselves can also run on Windows Server. You know, it can run inside of a Linux VM on Windows Server or a set of Linux VMs, certainly. But Windows Server itself has native support for those stacks as well, where you can install support for Python or PHP or Tomcat on Windows Server and leverage the IIS web stack to be able to provide the web server functionality around that.
Yeah, really good point. So a ton of options regardless of which stack you're using. You know, a lot of people think, you know, when I write in PHP or Ruby, I need to deploy that on Linux, but it's definitely not the case. You can deploy it on Linux, or you can put it in a Linux virtual machine running on Windows, or you can, you know, install it natively on Windows Server and let IIS manage your website. So let's talk about pros and cons just a little bit. We don't want to dive too deep into this, but if someone is thinking about, you know, installing that app natively on Windows versus putting it maybe in a Linux virtual machine on Windows, what would be some of the pros and cons of doing it each way, do you think, Keith?
So that's a great question. If the applications you're building are pretty well confined to the stack that you're developing within, in other words, the Node.js stack or the Python stack, running those as native applications on Windows Server works great, right? Provides great performance, great manageability, great functionality. If, on the other hand, some portions of your application have dependencies on calling out to other binaries that have been compiled on Linux and are providing other services outside of the Python or Ruby or Tomcat application stack, that's where, in order to fully run those Linux binaries, you'd want to think about either running inside of a Linux VM or running inside of a Linux container. And, you know, we talked a little bit about VMs versus containers with running Linux. One of the recent announcements that some of the viewers may be really interested in is recently at DockerCon, our Windows Server engineering team announced plans for supporting Hyper-V containers for running Linux side by side with running Windows workloads in Hyper-V containers. So the message there is that if you do have an application that needs to run on Linux, a Linux kernel, you have a choice now of running that in a Linux VM on Hyper-V, or if you're going down the containerization path, instead of having to spin up a VM and running a container inside of it, you can deploy it. You'll be able to deploy it soon, coming soon, as a Hyper-V container with the Linux bits inside of that Hyper-V container. So it makes it a lot easier to deploy, a lot better from a density story. Gives you better isolation, actually, because it is a Hyper-V container, like we've talked about in some of our prior episodes. So yeah, some exciting stuff coming down the road for Windows Server and Linux containers as well.
So let's cover that really quickly again. What is a Hyper-V container?
So a Hyper-V container basically takes container deployment technology and marries that up with the increased security and isolation that Hyper-V provides, typically in the old days for VMs, right? Mm-hmm. Where each VM has an isolated barrier around it on the underlying host that it's running on. And so when you deploy a Hyper-V container, you deploy it still like a normal containerized application, but you specify that you want it to be a Hyper-V container instead of a Windows Server container. And what happens is an extremely lightweight VM spins up that's optimized for running that container workload. The container deploys into it, and it runs on that Windows Server host. So it gives you the flexibility and agility of deploying it as a container, with the density and security improvements of being able to deploy it as a native Hyper-V resource.
Okay. So a Hyper-V container then is a, it's a lightweight virtual machine that's optimized to run a single container. Is that right?
Yep, exactly.
You think of it like that? Okay.
Yep.
And so this is going to give you the benefits of a true virtual machine and all the isolation and security of a true virtual machine with the ability to deploy a container into it and all the great functionality that comes with containers, like easy deployment and, you know, migration and all that kind of stuff. So now that we know a Hyper-V container is a lightweight virtual machine that's optimized for a single container, with that context, what was recently announced at DockerCon? Is it that I can have that lightweight virtual machine now running a Linux operating system?
Now running for to support Linux containers. Yep, exactly. So what the Windows Server engineering team is working on is the ability. So today, Windows Server 2016 can deploy Windows workloads as Hyper-V containers. And then coming soon is the ability to deploy Linux workloads as Hyper-V containers natively as well.
Okay, nice. Any other cool announcements at DockerCon that we haven't talked about?
So there was also another announcement for an update that's recently been made available for Windows Server 2016 to provide new integration into the networking stack for Docker Swarm clusters that are running on Windows Server and running Windows and Linux containers side by side. What this provides is the ability to present a common overlay network that Windows containers and Linux containers that are being managed by Docker Swarm on Windows Server can use to communicate easily back and forth. So that if you have an application that's got some Windows components and some Linux components as part of its overall application stack, they'll be able to natively communicate back and forth with ease, just as though they were written in the exact same stack. So there's a new update that's available that provides that new network integration.
Yeah, that sounds huge. A lot of people be very excited about that one.
Yeah, cool. There's a lot of excitement, yep.
So, wow, there really is a lot to talk about with open source and Microsoft on Windows Server and on Azure. One more thing I want to be sure that we cover is some of the third-party tools like Chef and Puppet that people are accustomed to using. How do these work with Windows Server?
Yeah, Chef and Puppet both have great support for Windows Server configuration management, just like they do in the Linux world as well. And so we see a lot of customers that are in that hybrid space where they may have made an investment in using Chef or Puppet for managing their Linux workloads are now starting to extend that, right, for also managing their Windows workloads as well. And it's a great benefit to them because they've already made an investment in Chef or Puppet, both monetarily perhaps if they have licensed versions of those products, as well as just the investment in building out those Chef recipes or Puppet Master servers or whatnot that they can now leverage across both Linux and Windows side by side.
Yeah, cool. Anything else you think we should cover here in the episode that people need to know about with open source and Microsoft?
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about running open source applications on Windows Server, but there's also kind of the data side of things as well, right? And so, you know, a lot of Linux environments use NFS. And so one of the things that I know we've talked about storage in a few other episodes, but we really didn't touch on the open source side of storage. Windows Server 2016 has a great NFS server stack built into it. It's part of the Server for NFS role. And with Server 2016, and in particular, some of the new enhancements like Storage Spaces Direct underneath the covers, we're seeing the ability to significantly lower storage costs. And for NFS in particular, when you compare the server for NFS running on Server 2016 versus running on a comparably sized Linux server, we're seeing internally, just from our initial internal testing, anywhere from 1.5 to 2x the performance and throughput on Windows Server. And so that's huge as well. A lot of organizations have an investment in Windows file servers for their Windows clients. And as you upgrade to Server 2016, it makes sense to think about how those same servers can now benefit your Linux servers that are in your environment via the NFS protocol as well. You could have one set of Windows servers that are serving the same shares, for instance, to Windows clients over SMB and to Linux clients over NFS.
Awesome. Yeah, so I want to ask you about, you know, why do you think we're seeing that performance increase with NFS? I know a lot of people are interested in Storage Spaces Direct and Storage Replica and you know, some of the other advanced storage technology that we talked about on previous episodes. And people spend a lot of money on storage. And, you know, as I always say, nobody's deleting anything. So the storage continues right. to grow and grow and grow. And yep. people are looking for new and interesting ways to, you know, still store stuff without, you know, blowing the budget. But with this new NFS offering and integration, why do you think that we're seeing this performance boost with NFS, with Windows Server 2016?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously Windows file servers have been a key workload that our server engineering team has optimized for over the last nearly 20 years, right? Starting all the way back in the NT days of Windows NT. It's been a key, continues to be a key workload. And so when taking that into account, a lot of the optimizations that we've done over the years with Windows Server to tune how caching works, how IOs work for file server performance, certainly Server 2016 benefits from. But then when you marry that up with the additional performance and cost benefits of underlying storage technologies like Storage Spaces Direct, of being able to pool together high-speed SSD or NVMe disk for super fast performance that can cluster across a group of servers, really that adds a whole new level of storage performance. And you had mentioned cost, at the same time, dramatically reduces cost versus what previously would have been necessary by purchasing third-party SAN solutions to deliver those kinds of storage performance numbers. So we take this engine that's been tuned for file services over the years, we put a super fast I/O system that can scale across multiple servers underneath it, and then we put a NFS server stack that's been specifically engineered for great performance over NFS version 4.1 on top of it, and end-to-end, it's just a great stack, right? And so I think it's a combination of investments that we've made that have delivered on these some of these internal performance results that we've been seeing.
Awesome. I know the storage people out there are getting really excited right now, and I'm getting excited too, because I consider myself a storage person a little bit. So you're talking about a lot of good stuff there. So it's awesome how the investments that we've made in the storage stack and Storage Spaces Direct really benefit NFS functionality as well. And it's really cool how you described, you know, using NFS and SMB together.
Yeah.
And getting great performance from both sides. That's awesome.
Yeah. And even if you're a completely Linux environment, no Active Directory, no nothing, you don't require Active Directory or any of the other Windows Server technologies to put in an NFS cluster. Server 2016 can run NFS in a workgroup mode where it's just a couple servers that are serving up a highly available NFS workload. Yeah. And use S2D between them, and it can map all of your Linux user and group IDs appropriately, and you can just slide it into your environment as a super fast, low cost file server scenario for your Linux VMs and Linux hosts.
Right, and all that using just normal servers, normal hard drives, no, yep. you know, fancy proprietary secret sauce. Very cool.
Yep, just standard, whether they're magnetic or SSD or NVMe disks, just standard off-the-shelf disks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have some upcoming episodes for all you storage people out there that are interested in some of the performance differences that we're seeing between spindle disks, SSD, and NVMe drives. We have some episodes coming up where we're going to show, you know, just the actual performance gains that you see in those different storage technologies. So very cool storage stuff coming up.
Great.
All right. What else, Keith? Anything else that people need to know as if they could take any more? Do you have any more?
I think we've done a great job of covering kind of things at a high level, but, you know, we'll be sure to include some links down over on the Orca site to more detailed information, certainly on what we've discussed today.
All right. Great. Awesome, Keith. Great episode. So much information here and so much cool stuff that we get to talk about. It's not like we had to dig very far to figure out, you know, all the new cool open source integrations with Windows Server and Azure.
Great. Thanks for having me on the show today, Eric.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for coming. That's going to wrap it up, everyone. I hope you learned a lot. I sure did on this episode. We'll see you next time on OEM TV.